Hi folks, Lee Pacquia from ICR here, and welcome to yet another episode of Unordinary Course, where we unpack emerging trends and current events to figure out what it all means for the restructuring community and the clients we serve. This one is going to be a little bit painful for me today because we're examining the digital media space, and in addition to being near and dear to my heart, it's also an industry in protracted turmoil. If you spend any time on social media these days, you're seeing a constant drumbeat of bad news and corporate failures in the digital media industry. We're going to take a closer look at the challenges facing the sector and try to figure out where it's heading in the future. While my topic today is dire, my guest is a rock star. Joining me now, we have Frank Pimenti, partner and managing director at Alex Partners. I can't think of anyone more qualified to walk us through the chop than him. Frank, thank you so much for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Lee. It truly is a pleasure joining you today.
And just a reminder, the views expressed on this podcast are those of myself and my guests and are not an official position of ABI. So, Frank, this has been an area of notable restructuring activity since at least the spring of 2023, when we saw BuzzFeed, News Shutter, and Vice Media file for Chapter 11, a case I should mention you worked on. Since then, it's been a steady stream of bad news up until recently when we saw the unceremonious shutdown of The Messenger. Sports Illustrated got into trouble. Vice's website went dark. Tons of layoffs across the legacy media landscape. And I'm generalizing here, but it doesn't feel to me like these are run-of-the-mill restructurings where you might have a good company with a bad balance sheet. Ad revenue is cratering. Audiences are shrinking. And seemingly every institutional-level news outfit is cutting jobs en masse. This feels to me more like an industry in meltdown rather than a restructuring wave. How do you see it, Frank?
So, Lee, I think you're right in that these are not run-of-the-mill restructurings. You know, as you know, in some cases, sectors may see a period of slower growth or, you know, some near-term headwinds due to, you know, various events that lead to situations where the capital structure no longer works, you know, points to more of a balance sheet restructuring, but operating models still work that just could support less leverage. You know, you could think of like travel industry dealing with SARS or COVID or oil and gas with periods of depressed commodity prices. When you turn to kind of legacy media, I wouldn't say that the legacy media industry is in a meltdown. I would just characterize it as the industry is dealing with kind of yet another kind of wave of disruptive innovation and change. You know, this industry, the media entertainment industry, it's always kind of been the poster child of creative destruction. Recent decades, kind of this digital disruption that we've seen really tested the business models of these companies as kind of new technologies, new entrants into the sector, you know, a lot of shifting consumer behavior has really accelerated this innovation and change. You know, I don't like to think that I'm old, but I know when I was a kid, news came and information came in the form of print media, you know, newspapers and magazines or the nightly network news. And all of a sudden, CNN comes out with 24-hour cable news. And all of a sudden, you can start getting your news and information, you know, closer to real time. You know, would this do? You know, put a lot of pressure on print and nightly broadcast news. You know, who wants to wait for tomorrow's paper or the kind of nightly news when you could tune in earlier on cable news? Now, cable news wasn't truly real time, you know, thinking back then. And I will tell you, in a prior life, I was a military intelligence officer. I recall in our kind of secure facilities, we'd have CNN on, and it was impressive on how fast global news hits the airwaves, but it still wasn't instantaneous. You know, there were definitely situations I knew when something happened and it took several hours for the information to hit the airwaves. You know, fast forward, you know, here we are now after the advent of the internet and the explosion of social media and digital media platforms. And this has kind of resulted in a big increase in competition for kind of eyeballs, viewers, and for dollars. And, you know, we're getting closer to real-time information and entertainment, you know, on Twitter or actually now X. Sorry, I can't get out of that habit of calling it Twitter, but now on X, when something happens in the world, someone's tweeting or posting real time, and consumers are starting to follow social media feeds to better understand what's happening as opposed to more traditional platforms. So basically, you know, more and more news and entertainment, this is starting to be consumed online versus kind of TV or in print. And, you know, I harken back to my client, you know, Vice News Tonight, that was an award-winning show, but I think ultimately that was kind of a victim of this trend. And so, you know, we see ourselves like today, there's just a proliferation. There's content fragmented across multiple platforms, digital networks and channels, and there's all of this competing for a share of consumer discretionary spend and advertising dollars that's really leading to this level of significant distress and the waves of restructurings that, we've seen recently as firms are really just trying to figure out how to adapt, you know, how to adapt their models to address this new reality and remain or become profitable.
Yeah. I mean, picking up on your remarks, you're right. It's not just digital news. There's trouble all over the digital media space. I'm reminded of Rooster Teeth, a pioneer in internet-based content creation that was recently shuttered by Warner Brothers. Radio and podcast provider Audacy filed a major Chapter 11 back in January. We have Troika Media, MediaMath, TV Azteca, all recent filings. It seems like anything touching content, aside from a few select categories, is facing monumental and financial operational challenges.
No, I think that that's right. You know, this just the media industry in general, it's always kind of being subjected to, you know, fast, rapid, and frequent changes in technology. You got kind of evolving customer preferences and, you know, constant introduction of kind of new content and features. You know, again, using my client as an example, you know, Vice was founded back in 94. You know, from that time to today, the print and digital media landscape evolved tremendously. You know, Vice worked hard to try to stay at the forefront of that evolution, but, you know, there's significant cost in investing and developing new technologies to react and adapt. And, you know, players in the space just need to constantly be in that mode of evolving to remain competitive.
Yeah. It's wild. I thought a number of these new media ventures were capitalized in an environment where people understood the shifting fundamentals and economics of the shift to the internet, and were built for the digital age. You know, Vice being founded in 1994, notwithstanding, that's a shocking number to realize. I always thought Vice started much later. How did so much capital market activity miss the mark in your view? It feels like a lot of people got this wrong.
Well, I would say it's just, again, there's always a level of change affecting this industry. And I think one, just the pace of change happened quicker than individuals might've thought. Yeah. You kind of look today at kind of this, how many different distribution channels there are. And, you know, this is really accelerated. You know, today, like we look at pay TV, historically, it's always kind of reliable platform for advertisers for decades. You know, they have always kind of relied on, you know, tentpole programming, things like elections and live news and sports. Yeah, that's all shifting towards live streaming models. You know, you look at connected TV now today, you know, that's rapidly approaching pay TV and is on track. I think the latest I saw is, you know, maybe capturing close to 40% of total TV ad spend. I think, you know, as these kind of new channels and new technologies have emerged, you know, one of the main factors that kind of accelerated or increased the level of underperformance, I think, is just kind of the cost pressures. You know, traditional media tends to have higher production and distribution costs. And as kind of ad and revenue dollars got further fragmented, as kind of these new channels and entrants, you know, entered and started competing for these dollars, again, I think at a pace far quicker than people may have anticipated, it put significant pressure on margins and required adjustments to the business models to be done quickly in order to operate more efficiently and maintain margins. You know, again, case of Vice, always impressed with their ability to really report and trouble spot to the world and get beneath stories. You know, it truly was, you know, award-winning journalism. But unfortunately, that costs a decent amount of money to produce all of these documentaries and news reports. And if the fragmented revenue dollars are not flowing in at levels that support these costs, it's just difficult to be profitable.
Yeah.
I worry because I think ultimately it's going to point to challenges for society. You know, if consumers and advertisers are not willing to pay for a certain quality of news, you know, production's going to have to trend to the cheapest, you know, most efficient, you know, alternative possible, which, you know, may depress quality of news and content we receive. But again, the pace of change is just really accelerated, and you could look out at the next several years. Now that we're seeing the rise of artificial intelligence, you know, how's this, that going to affect this landscape, and how are players going to react to that? You know, I'm not sure anyone truly saw that coming as quickly 5 years ago as it is, you know, kind of crystallizing. You know, that's going to have monumental changes to this sector as well, but it's really going to continue to make the sands kind of shift under these players' feet as they try to kind of adapt, you know.
Yeah, it's incredible to think about how the pace of change and the number of problems on the screen for the digital media space in general are all kind of converging. It almost seems like a perfect storm. I mean, just taking programmatic advertising alone, Josh Marshall, the owner of Talking Points Memo, put up a post a couple days ago on X, just showing how the programmatic advertising space has just cratered in the last 8 years or so. He illustrated in crystal clear terms that, you know, when he published this piece, you know, on March 6th, you can go find it on X, you know, had a graph indicating something like a 95% decline over an 8 year period in third party ad money. I mean, it's just not a viable revenue stream at these levels for, you know, a mid tier publication. You really have to rely on subscription revenues. And to be honest, that's a really tough existence, as a lot of, you know, single publishers are finding moving to platforms like Substack.
No, absolutely. I mean, as I know you've seen, you know, since kind of the kind of COVID pandemic, advertising spend really has cratered. And it's, you know, while this year I think we're expecting maybe single digit growth in overall advertising spend, I don't, yeah, and again, we may be getting a boost this year from the presidential election, which, you know, would kind of provide a boost to kind of advertising spend just in the U.S. in general. It's definitely unlikely digital kind of growth is going to return to the kind of high double-digit rates that we're seeing pre-pandemic.
And this might be a simplification, but looking back, you know, at the launch and the rise of so-called new media publications like Nick Denton's Gawker, BuzzFeed, I'd include Vice in that group. At one point or another, they all seem, to me at least, to want to hold themselves out to the market as something more than a publisher. They really wanted to be seen as tech companies with tech company valuations. And I guess putting it like that, I mean, you know, who wouldn't want that if you could sell the idea? How does that confluence, in your view, factor into the trouble or the troubles that these organizations ultimately ended up experiencing?
Yeah, I'm not sure I truly, you know, can answer that. It definitely was a factor. I think as distribution shifted towards online channels, I think, you know, everyone was trying to react. I don't think they truly could call themselves a tech company. Ultimately, they were kind of a content generation company. But it did require investment in technology. And I think those costs definitely were not generating the kind of ROI that were anticipated, kind of leading to a lot of the distress. So I think it was more they had to adjust to take advantage of these new channels and how consumers were beginning to consume their content, but it did require investment, and they ultimately were never getting the returns on those investments that they were seeking.
So where's the bottom? How much more fallout do you expect to hit the industry? And do you think we're approaching a level where digital media can start to find a more sustainable footing?
So it's a good question. Where's the bottom? You know, to tell you, anyone says they can accurately predict the top or bottom of an industry cycle, I would suspect that they're doing pretty well for themselves. I wish I had those powers. Now, what I'll what I could say, if you look back in time, you go back to kind of 2020, you know, if you look at public companies, you know, media valuations at that point in time were about 18 times EBITDA on an enterprise value to EBITDA basis. Yeah, as we looked at last year, 23, they then fell and were closer to kind of 10x, you know, down close to 50%, call it 45%. So if you look at the kind of legacy media debts that were raised over kind of previous investment cycles, especially during those periods of higher valuations, you'll find there's a lot of maturities and a bit of a maturity wall starting in 26. So to put into context, you know, we see maybe $39 billion of debt maturities in 24 for legacy media. By 26, it's going to be closer to $75 billion, nearly double, with 27 and 28, you know, coming in closer to 60. So with that in mind, I don't see the distress and restructuring activity in the media sector subsiding until at least after 26. However, you know, you asked about when you could find more sustainable footing. The sands continue to shift under these players' feet. Again, I mentioned AI. That's yet another example that's going to be playing out in, over the next several years. And that's going to kind of keep sustainable footing for digital media companies as elusive for many years to come. You look at kind of machine learning and generative AI. Everyone's talking about it. It really has the potential to revolutionize kind of production workflows and the content creation process. Now, I don't think it's going to completely replace the creative work done by humans, especially for more of the premium content. But a lot of the lower quality or high churn content, such as like social media or email marketing or some basic script writing, I would suspect a lot of that's going to be automated in the next few years. So the AI definitely has the potential to streamline tasks and, you know, many aspects of content creation. But on the plus side, it should enable kind of creators to focus more on kind of the artistry and innovation, et cetera. But the harsh reality is, you know, players in this sector will need to continue adjusting how they operate to kind of remain viable and compete profitably.
Yeah. Does that necessarily, in your view, mean pursuing a subscription-based approach to revenue? Or do you see a world where advertising could come back in some measure?
Yeah, that's a tough call, Lee. I could see that going either way. I mean, honestly, I don't know if I really have a perspective on that.
So, Frank, projecting further out here, what does a healthier digital media ecosystem look like in the future?
So, Lee, good question. I know we're talking a lot about all the challenges, you know, that the sector has been facing. Again, my background in restructuring and distress, I have worked across multiple industries, media recently, but, you know, as these industries go through their own periods of distress, within Alex Partners, just wanted to highlight, we have experts who focus solely on media and entertainment clients and helping them deal through all this accelerated disruption we were talking about, and, you know, all the multiple platforms and networks and channels, you know, competing for that share of discretionary spend and advertising dollars. One thing to note, we actually published what we call the Alex Partners 2024 Media and Entertainment Predictions Report to really dig into, you know, all of the changing customer demands and factors impacting the industry to understand where we think this is heading. Obviously, again, there's complex web of all the streaming services and platforms out there, you know, dealing with, rising prices and disparate billing forces, et cetera. So in this report, what we tried to do is predict for 2024, you know, what do we see playing out and how is that going to help determine the future direction of the industry? You know, some of the five kind of key predictions or topics that we really key in on that we think is going to help, you know, determine the direction of the industry is one, how wholesale distribution is going to help fuel subscriber growth for many of the streaming services. Talk a lot about AI. I mentioned that earlier. I think that, you know, getting to a healthier ecosystem, it's really going to be how do you get more efficient and take advantage of some of these technologies to compete profitably. But, you know, AI obviously is going to have a key factor in transforming both the operational and competitive landscape. Also, we talk a bit about this, the ad market in general, and how we see that recovering. I think I mentioned earlier, you know, predicting maybe mid-single-digit growth. I think, you know, that growth is going to be disparate across, you know, platforms. Again, a lot of competition and definitely a bit of kind of user growth saturation, especially on social media platforms. I think there's, you know, about 2/3 of the U.S. population is kind of using social media. So there's definitely a cap on kind of that user growth in the future. You know, talk a bit about kind of the M&A market and how we see that playing out. And again, you know, the summary is I think there's going to be limited M&A activity, you know, for the next year or so. But one kind of interesting tidbit in our report and this focus on local news in particular, that's where we are expecting to see a lot of kind of reinvestment and reinvention play out. Getting, you know, down to the kind of local level is going to be important. You know, I think there's just a trend towards kind of hyper-local and you know, more personalized content. That's kind of one of the areas where some of these players will really differentiate themselves, and kind of local news outlets in particular. We think we'll see a lot of activity in 2024 as they try to kind of reinvent themselves and compete in this market. So definitely worth a read. I'll share the link with you so that you and your listeners can download the report, but I definitely think it's worth a read. Has some kind of interesting thoughts on how this industry is going to play out over the next year.
Great, and we'll be sure to include the link in the description of this podcast so our listeners can find it.
Greg, while we have you here, what other industries are on your radar for an uptick in restructuring activity?
Yeah, if you look at the past year, there was a lot of activity in commercial real estate, consumer goods, and healthcare companies. You know, as we kind of look ahead, I definitely expect to see a lot of activity continuing in those sectors, specifically healthcare and commercial real estate. You know, when you look at commercial real estate, obviously a lot has been contributing to distress in that sector. You know, pandemic, you know, disrupted occupancy and usage, and like post-pandemic, you know, the demand for office space really has decreased a bit, which has put a lot of downward pressure on rents and values. But you couple that with, you know, this past year's rise in interest rates, that put a lot of pressure on kind of new deals and refinancing. So when you look ahead in that sector for the next 2 years, there is $1.2 trillion of commercial mortgage loans that are maturing. And I definitely expect, you know, refinancings will continue to be challenging and expensive, and that lending standards will continue to be tight as the market remains a bit skeptical of real estate investments. So definitely commercial real estate. And then healthcare, you know, if you take a look at large healthcare bankruptcies, you know, and I'll kind of define it as, you know, if they have like 10 million or more of liabilities, in 23, there was a spike. In 21, there would have been 25 large healthcare company bankruptcies. In 23, there were 79, more than triple. And, you know, I expect 24 is going to be another year of high activity in the healthcare sector as, you know, those companies continue to struggle with a lot of kind of operational and regulatory challenges. You know, they're dealing with a lot of rising costs and labor shortages. But there's also, you know, a lot of consumers are deferring non-essential care given the inflationary environment, which is decreasing number of patients. But more importantly, a lot of the regulatory changes and reimbursement issues that sector is experiencing are going to be big issues, especially for healthcare services providers. So definitely see a lot of continued activity in the healthcare segment as well.
No shortage of issues out there. Frank, thank you for your time today, sir.
Lee, really appreciate the time, and it was a pleasure being on your podcast.
That's Frank Mehdi, partner and managing director at Alex Partners, and that is our show for the month.
Thank you to the good folks at ABI for letting me do this, and a special thank you to you, the listeners, for making it this far. If you'd like what you heard today, do us a favor and hit that like or subscribe button. And even better, send us a note with your comments. Tell us what you loved. Tell us what you hated. All input welcome. Again, I'm Lee Packett from ICR. Thanks for listening and see you next time.